2nd, 23rd, or 24th for awesome specials and prizes.
Back for hour number two, broadcasting live this morning at the State House in Montpelier, as we do on Fridays. Oh my goodness, quite the snow squall just blew through here about 3-4 minutes ago. It's like being inside a snow globe. So down to Washington, or no, we're heading out to Ohio today. Joining us today from Talk Radio News Service, here's Bob Nay. Good morning, Bob. How's it going?
Good morning, Mark. How are you?
Pretty good. What's going on out your way weather-wise?
Well, weather-wise, about 28 degrees. It's okay. It's a heat wave.
Okay. Yeah, we're getting some more cold weather on the way. We've had a really cold winter here so far.
Well, we really haven't compared to last year, which came in late November and never left.
Yeah. Yeah. Huh. All right, top stories you want to talk about this morning or what?
Well, you know, of course, there's one international and one domestic, and the international is Belgium. We now know that, you know, Europe is increasingly beginning to come into the problems that America has had for quite a while in England, but the rest of Europe, but with the several raids in Belgium, two suspects are killed, some links over in Paris to two Turkish men arrested, and it's direct links, it seems, to ISIS. So Belgium went on the offensive and actually did the raids to try to weed out these cells.
Wow. Yep. This seems to be almost a daily story, Bob.
This is going to go on and on and on, I believe, because it's just mounting. And then in Ohio, we had, I want to preclude because I don't know what I'm talking about technically, but we have this this young man in Ohio, 20 years old. He was going to attack the Capitol. That's true. He was going to try to kill a congressman. That's true. But it does seem, at least to this point, that he didn't have direct orders from ISIS, but he has some, you know, mental illness issues. So you're going to have that combined with people that actually do get orders from ISIS. And I just think, Mark, this is going to be a long, long haul for the world.
You know, I was talking to somebody about this the other day, and you know, one of the difficulties here is that you're fighting a group that, you know, first of all, the rules don't seem to follow the general understood rules of engagement, and that can create such a huge problem with relative ease, it seems. I mean, there's just no way that you can create enough security to stop somebody from doing a small, you know, bomb, really.
Well, and I'm not going to mention it on air, but, I mean, I, like many people, can think of a couple of things to do that really, really, and I'm shocked they haven't, would inflict a lot of fear and terror, you know, in smaller towns and things. So, you know, I mean, the whole, when you look at it, it's just going to be something that, and you're very correct, that we're going to have to probably change some of our style in the sense that, you know, they're not following the rules. We have certain rules, but there's going to have to be an aggressive, you know, hunt down of these people, and it's going to take a big cooperative effort of those in the world who want to stop them.
Yeah, boy, it seems like it's a really difficult, like trying to clean up mercury almost.
It's true.
All right, what else do you want to mention?
Well, I wanted to mention immigration because, you know, I've been asked on many shows this morning, how on earth could the Republicans not have a backup plan because they're now sunk on immigration. They're done. They picked Homeland Security. Well, first of all, they picked the wrong agency. Second of all, they didn't have an exit plan. And the big overriding thing is they knew it wasn't going to pass the Senate anyway. But I think D.C. becomes so isolated that it doesn't do common sense, you know, moves like your listeners would, because if they were planning this, they would say, well, okay, it's not going to pass the Senate, so what do we do? Now the Republicans are saying, wow, it's not going to pass the Senate. What do we do? This issue's finished. The president has won on this issue, and it's done. Now the Republicans have to think of some clever way that they're going to look good with the public, which they're not going to look good with the public.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Anything you want to mention coming up? Right, that was good. You haven't lost your touch, Bob. But that,
thank you.
Anything coming up next week you want to tell people about?
Yeah, State of the Union, and I think you're going to see a very, very aggressive president who's going to say, yeah, I'll work with you, and by the way, let me tell you something. I think that's going to be the tone of the State of the Union.
Okay, all right. And I suspect we'll probably be talking to you before that.
Monday will be Victoria.
No.
Monday's a holiday. Victoria does Tuesday.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Thank you, Bob. Appreciate it. Have a nice weekend.
Thank you. You too. Bye-bye.
Former Ohio Congressman Bob Nape, now part of the team at Talk Radio News Service. A moment of your time for our friends right up the road here at Red Hen Cafe and Bakery, right off of Interstate 89, Exit 9 in Middlesex. Looking for a tasty sandwich? How about a nice hot bowl of fabulous soup? How about having one of those so that you can then easily justify moving heavily into the dessert category? They make fabulous chocolate chip cookies, by the way. You know, a real standard bearer out there. You got to make a good chocolate chip cookie if you're a good bakery, right? And so they make some really great cookies there, too, in addition to the other tasty treats that I mentioned on a much more regular basis. But, you know, and I'm doing my best here to go through and sample everything in the dessert category so that I will be fully informed when I present this information to you. Somebody has to do it. Stop in and see our friends at Red Hen Cafe and Bakery. If you can ever get a hold of the coffee cake that they make on weekends, whoa, that is the best coffee cake that you will ever have. So check out Red Hen Cafe and Bakery right off of the interstate. It's right there on Route 2. You cannot miss it. And we encourage you, as always, when you stop in there, that you say, howdy from us here at WDEV AM and FM. They close at 4 on Mondays. The rest of the week, they close at 6. You can also stop there on the way home. How about one of those nice pizza crusts that are cooked almost all the way through? A lot of ingredients there at Red Hen you can put on top of it, too, including some cheese. Nice selection of wines, nice selection of beers as well, too. Red Hen Cafe and Bakery, right off of Interstate 89, Exit 9 in Middlesex. Quick break, back after this.
It's an in-state road weekend for the Norwich University Cadets. I'm George Cuomo. The Cadets travel to South Burlington on Friday night, taking on the St. Michael's Purple Knights at Cairns Arena. Then Saturday night, it's down to Middlebury and a matchup with the Panthers at Kenyon Arena. Norwich Hockey this weekend on the Northfield Savings Bank, WDEV Norwich Hockey Network.
Winter's in full swing, and now is the time to head to Balton Valley, your neighborhood ski area. And since you're their neighbor, you'll always find a way to save on lift tickets. Start by planning ahead and buying your tickets online at BaltonValley.com in the new online store. You'll always save over the retail rate, even if you only plan ahead by one day. College students, listen up. Midweek lift tickets are just $19 from January 5th through the 16th with college ID. Every Friday night is late night at Balton Valley with $19 lift tickets from 7 to 10 p.m. Every Saturday night is Balton After Dark when night skiing lift tickets are just $19 and flatbread slices and sodas are just $2 starting at 4 p.m. Mondays are 50-50 Mondays where folks age 50 and over save 50% on lift tickets and more. Sunday, January 18th is a bonus night skiing night, and lift tickets will be $19 from 4 until 8 p.m. Get more information on other deal days at BaltonValley.com.
Need some extra cash after the holidays? Granite Hills Credit Union has a personal loan with a great rate and a one-year term to give you affordable payments. You can use your loan for anything: holiday expenses, travel, bills, anything. Need a bigger loan? We offer some of the best rates available on auto loans, mortgages, Visa cards, and home equity loans. Not a member of Granite Hills? Not a problem. We are open to the community and we want to serve you. Find out how we can help you with those extra expenses that come up during the year. Stop by our Barrie or Montpelier offices, give us a call, or visit our website at granitehills.org.
At Granite Hills Credit Union, the difference is you.
Granite Hills Credit Union is an equal housing lender and is federally insured by the NCUA.
Maplefields and Irving want you to ski for free. Fill up three times with Irving gasoline at their newest Maplefield store in downtown Newport, just off I-91 in St. Johnsbury, or any other Maplefield Irving locations, and you'll be eligible to receive a buy one, get one free lift pass at great local mountains like Burke, Jay Peak, Smugs, and Bolton Valley. With these new Maplefield locations, a great cup of coffee is never far away when you're on your way for an exciting day at the slopes. Come see them during their grand opening celebration in St. Johnsbury on January 22nd, 23rd, or 24th for awesome specials and prizes.
Back at the State House in Montpelier, let's give a nice warm Radio Vermont welcome this morning to Senator Kevin Mullen from Rutland County. Thank you for joining us, Senator.
Good morning, Mark.
Let me get a couple of reactions of some of the proposals the governor laid out yesterday. You're somebody who does focus a lot on economic development and your work here at the legislature. What about this payroll tax? Think it's got a chance of flying?
It might have a chance of actually making it through the building. I have grave reservations because we all know what happens when you start down the road of a new tax. It's always going to be only a certain amount. And to think that over time there won't be repeated efforts to try to increase that 0.7 to a higher amount for whatever the good meaning program of that particular time is, that's going to happen. So I would be very leery of jumping on board if I was a business and believing the promise that is coming from the people that are here today that you're going to get more of a benefit in reduced cost of the health insurance that you're paying for than you will be paying for the 0.7 of a payroll tax. And, you know, you hate to say that because ideally what the governor said makes sense. And certainly we should be properly funding Medicaid. We've been saying that for years. And in fact, this goes back to well before my even being elected to Montpelier. But when I was in the House, I think it was in 99 or 2000, I was one of a group that offered an amendment on the floor. This is a time when we actually had surplus revenues.
Uh-huh.
And we said at that time, let's just bring Medicaid up by 10% a year till it reaches Medicare levels, and Governor Dean called us boneheads, and so we proudly wore boneheads for healthcare buttons for about a year. So this is not something new. I mean, and it's just gotten worse over time. We have grossly underfunded the Medicaid programs, told our providers that, you know, you have to do it for X. And what has happened is we've cost shifted onto everyone that has to buy their health care through Blue Cross or MVP. And what we're currently being told is that it's about 40% more for that insurance than it would be if there wasn't the cost shift. So how do you argue against that? You don't. So the biggest thing that I think we have to do is, if we do go down this road, is to try to figure out a way to protect against that tax being used for anything other than its intended purposes, and to make sure that the Green Mountain Care Board actually does what it set out to do under this proposal from the governor, and that is to contain costs and reduce the actual cost of health insurance. So, you know, to me, it's one of those proposals that on paper it looks great, but given the past history of what happens here in Montpelier, I'm pretty skeptical and not really jumping on board and urging people to support it.
Let's talk about education. The governor spoke yesterday about having partnerships with local communities. No real big change to the funding formula. This whole idea that working with communities, educating them about costs, and if they don't meet certain performance levels, consequences will happen. What do you think about this?
I think he was right on.
Is it adequate?
Well, I would even take it a step further. When, you know, I chaired the Education Committee for 2 years, and one thing became abundantly clear is that you're not going to be able to do a solution for Montpelier that addresses the different concerns from around the state. Everybody has different demographics, different topography, and to think that we can just make one quick move from here that's going to fix that is unrealistic. I think that what I've been saying is that we should be sending teams to each area, and I think Secretary Holcomb is kind of doing that. I would step up those efforts. I would have a team made up of someone that's a former business manager, someone that has a tremendous financial background, similar to like a Norm Andrus, who was intricately involved in the redesign of the Reds in the mountain towns down in the southern part of the state. That's what we need. We need to be able to go in, take a look at an area and say, okay, this is what you have today. If you realigned it like this, you could have better opportunities for your children, a better quality education, and you could save X amount of dollars. So there has to be significant carrots and sticks for this to work. And I think the governor, it was almost strange the way he approached it yesterday, because he was talking about protecting local control, but then he was also saying that if decisions weren't made properly, that they had to be made. So I don't know where that all plays out, but I'm willing to support him 100% in the efforts to try to tackle this issue, because what we heard consistently throughout the campaign is that property taxes are the absolute number one concern of people, at least in my Senate district.
244-1777 is our local number. Toll free, 877-291-8255. Let's go to Barry. Tom, good morning.
Yeah, hi. I've just been listening to the governor and your other guests, and I think what I find seems to be the main problem with our schooling, the schools is the huge staff numbers compared to student numbers. And I used to run a food service program, and I just find that, how are you going to be able to do anything when you have the NEA teachers union absolutely protecting every custodian, bus driver, teacher, teacher's aide, office assistant, librarian assistant, at every turn of the corner? And I just think I don't know how you're going to be able to do it without the union squashing pretty much anything to do with the staff. And I'll just listen.
All right. Thank you, Tom.
So what I hear from members of the Vermont NEA is they are just as committed to trying to come up with a realistic solution to this problem as every other Vermonter. And you can't blame the union officials for doing what their job is, to protect their members. But I think realistically, they realize that the current path that we're on is unsustainable. And if it's done in a well-thought-out manner where the children benefit and we have a better quality education, I think we can get the support of their members.
Sounds like this might take some time. I wonder if Vermonters are going to be patient.
Well, I'm surprised they've been as patient as long as they have been. Quite frankly, our property tax burden has been increasing dramatically for a number of years, and the patience that has been exhibited up to now is quite admirable, because everybody realizes that education is one of the most important things that we can do as a society. We have to give our kids a chance. Education is the great equalizer. And so I don't think anybody ever wants to vote against a budget, because they want to be able to give the children in their community the opportunity to succeed. But it's at a breaking point, and so we all have to come together. And in times of adversity, that's when people generally do come together. So I'm actually optimistic that this is the session that we can finally tackle a problem that we've known exists and have been unable to tackle for several sessions.
But is it going to take more than what the governor proposed?
Probably.
Give me an example of what else it needs.
Well, I don't think that what the governor has proposed actually moves quick enough to get to the real causes of what is causing the growth. And to be fair to the school districts, we are asking them to do now more than what they've ever done before. So, for example, on Friday, I received a call that involved a child who was in basically trouble, that DCF needed to take steps to make sure that child was protected. But on the same token, that school district, because of the aggressive nature, because of what the child had been exposed to, both sexually and physically, they had to segregate that child from the rest of the population. So they had to have one adult with that child giving them remedial education for the whole day. And that's a task that we've put on the schools. And there's no way around that, because if they put that child in that other classroom, none of the children are going to be given a chance to learn. And so when you take a look at what's going on now in Senator Sears and Senator Ayers' committee with the report of the Child Protection Panel.
Yeah.
Everything is so integrated. You know, you push on one side of a balloon, it goes out on the other. And we have to address those concerns as well so that we're not driving up the cost of education because we're not fully protecting the children in the state.
So go back to the phone. Owen, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Mark and Senator. Thank you for taking my call. I had some comments on the Medicaid situation and the proposal for the 0.9%, I guess it is, tax increase on payroll.
Yep. 0.7. Yep.
The first point I'd make is it's not a tax on employers. It's a tax on employees. It's going to come out of their compensation one way or another.
Okay, hold on before you go too much further here.
So unless I missed something completely from what the governor said, what I heard him say that it was going to be a tax on the employer, and it would be similar to the additional withholding that employers have to pay today, and they would file that on their quarterly return, and that it is not a deductible tax from the employee, but rather just a tax on the employer, similar to workers' compensation tax today.
But I guess I don't want to preempt your point here, but I think he's going to probably say that if employers have to pay that, there'll be less money available for us employees.
I think that's
exactly correct. But the governor's proposal is under the premise that he's going to reduce the costs that the business is paying for the employees' health care so that they won't have an additional expense and that they'll break even. I'm not saying I agree with the governor on that premise, because even if he can do it for 1 year, can he do it in perpetuity, or will the next governor have the same commitment to do that, or will the next legislature have the same commitment? So I haven't bought this proposal, and I'm not trying to promote it. I'm just trying to say that I understand where the governor is coming from.
Okay. Owen, sorry. Go ahead.
Well, the other point I wanted to make was a short one. Last year, I believe the legislature put in their budget an additional $40 million for Medicaid. But then when the budget shortfall showed up, that was kind of the first thing they took out of the budget and withdrew that money. So there's a little history there. My next point is, my understanding is that when we expanded Medicaid as part of the Obamacare, that the federal government picked up the additional cost related to that. But over a period of a few years, that's going to roll back to the state, and the state's obligated to pay those additional costs. So that might imply that that percentage of payroll tax would need to go up.
Okay. All right. Let me have him comment on that. Thank you for your call, Owen. I appreciate it.
Yep.
Well, actually, I think Owen's brought up a great point in that, and that's one of the reasons why I'm very skeptical of the proposal, is I think there will be pressures over time. You know, we can't keep pretending that money that comes from the feds isn't taxpayer dollars. And whether it comes out of our right pocket or our left pocket, it's still our taxpayer dollars. And over time, there is going to be pressure on the federal government to bring spending in line. None of us should be promoting federal spending that puts our children and grandchildren in higher debt than they already are in. And so, again, that's another problem with the proposal. Yes, by doing this 0.7% payroll tax, we do leverage the funds, because for each dollar we raise, we get $1.10 from the feds. But that's still our tax dollars. And it's also still subject to who's ever in power in Washington and whether they will continue the same share that they currently have. And I'm not overly optimistic that we can continue that same path for the next 10 years, let alone the next 5 years.
Talking with Senator Kevin Mullen. What did you hear in the governor's speech yesterday on economic development and jobs that heartened you, if anything?
Well, our committee had really pushed hard last year to try to get a performance-based increase in travel and tourism, and the governor did announce that in his address yesterday, but he also tied it to the general fund not being in a deficit. So again, I wonder if that's really a commitment, or is it just a statement that if this might happen, and you know, there are two sides to the balance sheet, and what I've said repeatedly is that we don't spend enough effort in trying to grow the state revenues by increasing our economic development in the state, by creating jobs, by creating more tax revenue coming in, rather than just focus on the other side. And so I'm very concerned about that. He did make three proposals on the veggie program that could possibly have some positive benefits. I think the governor gets it. I think the governor understands that we need to have economic development. So I have nothing as far as criticism and what he said yesterday for the economic development format.
What about the cuts to human services? What was your reaction to those?
You know, part of the problem, Mark, is we get the budget address, which talks about these generalities, and we have to try to figure out what he's really saying. And so I was heartened to hear that he's not going to make any cuts to the Department of Children and Families. We know that we can't do that because they need additional resources. They're stressed now. And but I'm going to have to leave that to my colleagues in the appropriate committees to really pore over what that means as far as the cuts to the other parts of the human services. So until Senator Ayers had a chance in her committee and Senator Kitchell in appropriations to really take a close look at it, I think most of us here on the legislative side are still in the dark as to exactly what he has proposed.
What was missing in terms of economic development?
Well, I think there was a kind of a general mention of the fact that we have an opportunity to retain jobs and possibly even create new jobs at Global Foundries, but there wasn't really any flesh to that piece of the address. I know that this legislature is committed to making sure that we protect Vermont's largest employer, whether that's IBM or whether it's Global Foundries. And I think we have to have that same regional approach throughout the state to make sure that large employers, so for example in my territory, General Electric, if General Electric were to leave, Rutland County would be desperate. And so we have to have a focus on making sure that we're creating the type of an environment that they can thrive in. And I would have liked to have heard a little bit more about that, and I didn't. But again, I think the governor shares that same belief.
Last question. When you were on the healthcare committee, you were pushing for studies that would demonstrate whether any sort of new healthcare financing plan would be damaging to the economy. Last month, the governor dropped this plan. What do you make of that?
Well,
right decision, wrong decision?
I think it was the right decision at that time, but I still have to get to the part that what I was saying back in 2010 and 2011 holds true today, that our current system is unsustainable, just like our education system. Healthcare is just as unsustainable. And if we don't make the number one priority the focus on cost containment, then we're in trouble. And the governor really talked a lot about cost containment yesterday, but where have we been for the last 4 years? And why didn't we do more to try to bring down the cost of healthcare in the state of Vermont? You know, Professor Shaw had laid out $500 million to $700 million in potential savings. We in the legislature and the governor refused to do anything meaningful as far as malpractice. And after hearing all the testimony, I tend to agree that we may not actually lower our malpractice rates in the state of Vermont by changing our system. But if that's the case, then why didn't we look at creating a state-run captive insurance industry where we insure all medical providers so that we can reduce defensive medicine? There's been no discussion of protocols to say that if a medical provider does A, B, and C, and that's what's necessary, that they're not going to be hurt for not doing E, F, and G. And so I just think that we've missed the opportunity for the last 4 years to move in the proper direction. And the reason for that is that the exchange was such a colossal mix-up and just a real drain on everyone's resources, not only financially, but also in human resources, mm-hmm. that we have not put the focus where the focus needs to be, and that is trying to create a system that we can afford to pay for.
Still, we just got another call today about the healthcare exchange. Still problematic.
Well, there's no question it's problematic. And, you know, when you think of the millions and hundreds of millions of dollars really that have been put into this, you just shake your head and you have to wonder if we can ever do anything right as the state when it comes to technology. We mess up one technology project after another.
Thank you for your time this morning, Kevin. I appreciate it very much.
You're welcome, Mark. Thanks for having me.
Senator Kevin Mullen from Rutland County. We'll take a short break back at the legislature right after these important announcements.
Tired of grocery shopping at huge supermarkets with no personality? This is Tom Mihuron, and I invite you to shop our well-stocked, right-sized family market in Waitsfield. Custom-cut meats, fresh seafood and produce, gourmet cheeses, regular and organic groceries, and over 1,000 wines. Come and see Jeff and Bill in the meat department, Tana in produce, Gary in seafood, Nate in the deli, or Nancy and Liz in our incredible wine department. Family-run for over 70 years. Mihuron Supermarket, Village Square Shopping Center in Waitsfield.
Are you ready to pay a new $1.35 per gallon tax on gasoline? Well, a coalition of 15 progressive groups led by VPIRG is calling for Vermont to pass a $250 million per year carbon tax on things like gas and home heating fuel. What do you think? Good idea or bad idea? Learn more about this and who's behind it, and make your voice heard by signing the Vermont Carbon Tax Survey at ethanallen.org. Again, that's ethanallen.org. Paid for by the Ethan Allen Institute.
For the latest weather forecast, call the WDEV weather phone, 800-585-1211 or 244-1172. The WDEV weather phone, sponsored by Twin City Subaru on the Berlin Mall Road. Stop in today and let one of the gurus introduce you to Vermont's unofficial state car.
We're back at the State House in Montpelier, broadcasting live as we do here on Fridays. I want to share with you some comments I caught up earlier this morning with the Speaker of the House, Shap Smith. I will share those comments with you in here in just a moment. First, let me take a moment of your time to remind you about our good friends up the road at Jet Service Envelope. They're located in Southbury. I guess that's down the road. Well, up the hill down the road. You know what I mean. And you can find them at the end of this phone number. They're easy to find, easy to deal with, really quick turnaround time. And my goodness, why do you want to be spending a lot of money on equipment in your office when you really only do a relatively small number of projects? Just think about that for a moment. Think about what the cost is. Think about all those service contracts, the equipment contracts, contracts, and then you could have just picked up your phone and called 229-9335. And you get a lot more information on the web as well at jetservice-envelope.com. I'm here with the Speaker of the House, Shap Smith. Let me get an overall impression of yesterday's speech first.
I thought that the speech acknowledged the realities that we face, put forward some new ideas to resolve some long-term challenges that we've had, particularly along the cost shift, and I thought it was a pretty good speech.
All right, let's talk about the cost shift. This would require a payroll tax. The reaction I'm hearing from many people is this would be a new tax, might start small. People worry or it will get much larger.
Well, we have to think about where we are right now. Right now, there's a hidden tax on businesses that are paying for their employees' insurance because they are paying for the cost shift associated with reimbursement rates for Medicaid. And that cost shift is significant. It's probably $100 million. And so what I think is appropriate in what the governor is suggesting is, one, that we're rationalizing the system so people can actually see how much it costs for Medicaid. Two, I think it's fairer because you have both businesses who are impacted by this now because their premiums are going up are paying, and they're going to get that savings in their premium. And then the people who aren't paying at all will have to go into the system, and I think that's fair.
Okay, but what about this concern about the future, that, that once you start a tax, then you never end it?
I think that is always an appropriate concern, but hey, we have this hidden tax that exists now and that employers are paying, employers who provide coverage, and they're going to continue to pay it, and it will continue to get larger and larger and larger. The other thing that the governor hit on, but I don't think hit on as hard as, or people didn't hear it as clearly as they should have, is we need to resolve this cost shift issue if we're going to be able to really deal with payment reform and the all-payer waiver with the federal government. So this is one way for us to get at addressing some of the payment reform and cost issues.
Well, the idea is that businesses somehow will come out even, or it'll be a wash. So how do you assure that these savings actually flow back to businesses?
The way that you'll do it is working with the Green Mountain Care Board to ensure that the rates reflect the fact that the cost shift has been adjusted. And so the authority of the Green Mountain Care Board needs to be strengthened. I think it already exists, but they can see exactly how much the cost shift is pressuring rates, and if you're addressing the cost shift, they can take that out of insurance premiums right now. So you know, I've talked with Al Gobay about this. I've talked with Don George, who is the head of Blue Cross Blue Shield. You know, I cannot support something like this unless I have assurances that this comes directly out of the premiums that are paid for businesses. And the other thing is, you are leveraging federal money by moving forward with this. And so you're bringing down basically $1.10 for every $1 you're raising. So this is something that many people have complained about for years. The Republicans have complained about it. The Democrats have complained about it. Businesses have complained about it. The governor put something on the table to address it in a fundamental way, a substantial and real way. And what I would encourage people to do is, if they don't like the plan, then put an alternative on the table. And others have. You know, there have been proposals by Representative Comline in the past, who's a Republican from Dorset, to address the cost shift by raising money through taxing claims. So, you know, this is not a new challenge. The governor has put a bold proposal on the table. We'll take a look at it.
Let's talk about education funding and education financing. Did you feel the governor adequately addressed that issue yesterday?
Well, I appreciate the fact that the governor spoke about it in the speech. I also appreciate that he articulated a number of ideas that had been put forward by the study group that I had formed earlier this year, or earlier last year. I think that we'll have some disagreements about some of the specifics, but I think the governor has joined the debate, and I don't think the debate could have happened without the work that Secretary Holcomb at the Agency of Education has done over the last year to really lay the groundwork for making changes that I think will improve our schools and be ones that make them better for our students.
But what did the governor lay out yesterday that gave you hope, or should give Vermonters hope, that school costs will go down or that their taxes will go down?
I think particularly interesting from my perspective, and this is something that I've been thinking about a fair amount, is the idea of going out and working with schools and giving them recommendations about what they're doing well, what they're not doing well, and ways that they can be more efficient and provide more opportunities to their students. And then also saying, you know, if you don't make some of these changes, there will be some consequences for that. So you know, this is a long-term challenge. It's taken us a while to get in into this problem, and I think it's going to take a little while to get us out. You know, there will be those, and I probably am one of them, who would say I'd like to have more immediate property tax relief. the reality is that's going to cost some money somewhere else, and we'll have to see what we can do about that during the session.
Is it an equal partnership, though, when the state can threaten to close down a school, carve you out of the formula?
Well, let's be really realistic about this. For many of these schools, they are facing the possibility of closing anyway. The pressures that the property tax puts on them, the fact that they're losing schools at a pretty significant rate, for many of them, the challenge that they face is a survival challenge. And I think that if we can give them some guidance about how they can either restructure or merge keep their school open, I think that is a partnership that's worth having.
AHS cuts some almost 25 to 30 million. Really?
Well, if you're going to address a $93 million budget gap, and the Agency of Human Services is where almost half of the budget is, then $25 to $30 million seems appropriate.
LIHEAP funding, do you think that can withstand public pressure?
Let's talk about the history of this. For years, the LIHEAP funding was funded by the federal government. And basically, they cut the amount that they were providing and shifted it off onto the state. And for many of us, when this happened, including me, I was really concerned about taking on that obligation and didn't think that it was sustainable in the general fund. And I think that this is the reality of what happens when the federal government does not meet its commitments, and we don't have enough money and we have to make the hard choices. So we end up bearing the brunt of making those difficult choices, when really in the end it was the federal government who had taken on the obligation and then shed it.
Last question. So you were highest on what proposal and lowest on what proposal yesterday?
I haven't really had a time to think through all of that. You know, it's going to take a little time to really dig through things. You know, the devil is always in the details. I realize that's pretty trite, but we do need to really...
Yeah, somebody already used that line yesterday.
Right. I really need to spend some time with the budget, and I'm intrigued by a number of the proposals, and I look forward to working through it over the coming months.
But you're not DOA on this payroll tax.
I believe that we have to address the cost shift, because if we do not address the cost shift, it's going to continue to mean that businesses are going to pay more in their premiums. And it's also a real issue with regard to attracting particularly primary care doctors and giving availability to people who are on Medicaid, giving, you know, health care availability for them. And also, I think that if we don't address it, we are going to be in real trouble with regard to payment reform. So there are more than one way to do this, but I believe that it's an appropriate thing to be under consideration.
I was the Speaker of the House, Shaf Smith. I caught up with him earlier this morning. A moment of your time for our friends at Green Mountain Access. If you're looking for outstanding internet coverage, internet service from a local company right in your backyard, make it our friends at Green Mountain Access. You can call them at 1-888-321-0815. They're on the web at gmavt.net. They're a division of Waitsfield and Champlain Valley Telecom. You might want to talk with them about combining your services, bundling them together into one handy-dandy affordable package. You can do that toll-free at 1-888-321-0815. And they will do all the heavy lifting for you. There's really not much work you have to do other than supplying some information. They'll get the transition happening. 1-888-321-0815. And on the web at gmavt.net. I welcome your emails. You can always reach me at my Green Mountain Access account, Mark, M-A-R-K, at gmavt.net. We'll take a short break. We'll be back after these important announcements.
Maplefields and Irving want you to ski for free. Fill up three times with Irving gasoline at their newest Maplefield store in downtown Newport, just off I-91 in St. Johnsbury, or any other Maplefield Irving locations, and you'll be eligible to receive a buy one, get one free lift pass at great local mountains like Burke, Jay Peak, Smugs, and Bolton Valley. With these new Maplefield locations, a great cup of coffee is never far away when you're on your way for an exciting day at the Slopes. Come see them during their grand opening celebration in St. Johnsbury on January 22nd, 23rd, or 24th for awesome specials and prizes.
Do you have difficulty reading, writing, or doing basic math? You're not alone. About 35,000 adults and teens in Vermont have low literacy skills. Each year, hundreds of these people decide to build their academic skills by enrolling at Central Vermont Adult Basic Education. CVABE provides free, confidential instruction for adults and teens living in Washington, Orange, and Lamoille counties. Some are learning basic reading or math for the first time. Others are gaining education to earn a high school credential or to secure a job. Many residents are reaching new goals through literacy. It all begins by taking the first step. To learn more about CVABE's free education programs, call 802-476-4588. CVABE proudly thanks Vermont's banks and credit unions for their leadership in our Investing in Literacy campaign.
Share with you more reaction from Governor Shumlin's budget address yesterday, right after the speech I caught up with Lieutenant Governor Phil Scott. I'm here with Lieutenant Governor Phil Scott. Phil, your reaction to the speech, the budget speech?
Well, I thought he covered a lot of ground. There was a lot of information there. It's going to take a little bit to, I guess, dissect every piece, but there was some good points, some points that I would agree with, and I was very happy that he spoke about economic development and being better partners with some of the business folks in Vermont, and how do we can do better, and I thought that was positive. There were some areas that I'm questioning, the payroll tax being one, but I'm going to take a look and sit back and really take a close look and see where we find areas of agreement first, and then go from there.
Were you at all surprised that, I'm not going to say this was easy, but what did you think about the ability to even handle a $94 million gap?
Well, I was trying to do the math, actually. I came up with about 55 million in my head, so I'm not clear about where the other 35 or 40 million is, and maybe it was there, I just missed it, but we'll see. It did seem that there were areas that were a bit vague, so again, details do matter.
Thank you. That was Lieutenant Governor Phil Scott yesterday after the speech. An email that I received this morning, let me share with you some of the comments of one of our listeners. Chris writes in about our discussion with Senator Dick Sears. He says, "Hi, Mark. Wow, Senator Dick Sears seems remarkably disinterested / ill-informed about legislation which will appear before a committee of which he is ostensibly the chairman. He says he doesn't, quote, believe, unquote, there is a problem that necessitates the background check bill, but doesn't seem to base that on any kind of evidence other than personal or anecdotal. If there were no problem, would John Campbell, Phil Baruth, and Claire Eyre, all three senators, introduce a bill to deal with it? Seems unlikely, especially given the enormous amount of grief they will take from the gun lobby. You stated that the bill will call for extensive background checks, but in fact it will merely apply the same background checks which are applied to sales at licensed dealers to all gun sales, be they private sales or those that take place at gun shows. There will be no exceptions for transfers between family members and other specific exemptions. As it stands now, people can sell guns to others without any knowledge of whether they've been adjudicated by a court to be a danger to themselves or others, and or whether they're domestic abusers, drug runners, or others who are not allowed to own them. I found his statement that he should be able to give you a pistol, no questions asked, to be patently absurd. I'm sure you'd pass a background check, thanks Chris, but someone shouldn't be able to give you or sell you or anyone a gun without verifying that he is not prohibited from owning a gun." That's pretty much the sum and substance of his comments on that. 244-1777, that's our local number in Central Vermont. You can also reach us on our toll-free lines at 1-877-291-8255. Coming up on the program on Monday, I'm looking forward to our discussion. We're going to be chatting about Senegal.
Seems like a lot of...
Again, you can join us on that program as well. If you ever miss any of the programs that we have, I do encourage you to head to our program website. That's at markjohnsonshow.com. And you can download podcasts there free of charge. Again, that's at markjohnsonshow.com. Let's head over to Washington. Chris, how are you this morning?
Good, Mark. How are you?
I'm good, thanks.
You just read my letter.
Oh, all right.
And there will be exceptions for transfers between family members.
Okay.
I think you might have misread that.
Oh,
all right.
I just wanted
to clarify.
Okay, all right.
Thank you.
Okay, all right. Thank you. I appreciate your writing. I appreciate your writing me as well, too. Thanks for doing that.
Thanks. Have a good one.
You too. 244-1777. That's our local number in central Vermont. See, you know, here's a beautiful thing about this show. Here's a beautiful thing about radio. I mean, how many media outlets do you have something like that where you can get an immediate correction on something like that? So you gotta love it. All right. Before we conclude this morning, I do want to share with you one more round of reaction yesterday to the governor's proposal. I caught up with Betsy Bishop, who is the president of the Vermont Chamber of Commerce, somebody who I figure might be interested in this issue that involves the proposed payroll tax. The president of the Vermont Chamber, what did you think of the payroll tax?
Well, that was an area of the budget address that I have some concern with. Obviously, an increase in the payroll tax is not something that employers are encouraged by. However, the notion of offsetting the Medicaid cost shift and the amount of that they were talking about today is something that we'll take a closer look at.
Anything else in the speech stand out for you?
Sure. The governor had mentioned a marketing and promotion budget, something that we've been supporting for quite some time, to be able to market Vermont as a great place to live and raise a family, to bring more businesses in, and we were really excited to see that as well.
So this payroll tax for you is not dead on arrival?
It's quite a concern for us. I just haven't seen the numbers at this moment.
So what are you going to want? What are you going to look for in this?
I'm going to look at what a 0.7% payroll tax means to employers across the board. I'm going to understand what that means to my businesses, and I'm going to weigh that against the return that we get on the reduction in the cost shift. We're paying about 44% more for our insurance than others, and so we do need to see a corresponding decrease in that.
Are you worried about a foot in the door here?
Absolutely. This is really a new tax. It's, for all intents and purposes, it's an income tax, and it's the start of something new. Certainly, we just came off of an announcement that's less than 60 days old that says we're not going to link a payroll tax with health care, and now we are linking that with employment and health care. So there's a lot for me to learn here.
That was the head of the Vermont Chamber of Commerce, representing many of the businesses here in the state, talking about the governor's proposal that he laid out yesterday in his budget address, talking about instituting a payroll tax of 0.7%. This would be used to raise money. The actual number on this on an annual basis, you've heard this number bandied about, of about $40 million. That's half a year, because the proposal wouldn't kick in until July of next year. So really, on an annualized basis, the governor really is talking about something that could raise to the tune of about $80 million, and then leveraging this federal money as well, too. So some interesting proposals that will continue to get discussed here at the legislature. We will be here on Fridays throughout the course of the legislative session so that we can provide you access and hopefully information about what is going on here under the Golden Dome. Have a great weekend, everybody. Come back and join us same time, same place Monday, would ya? And please be safe out there and stay warm. This is FM 96.1 WDEV Warren, broadcasting from the top of Sugar Bush, FM 96.5 in Barrie and Montpelier. You can find us at 101.9 in the Northeast Kingdom, and the flagship, AM 550 WDEV Waterbury Montpelier. News is next.
AP Radio News. I'm Rita Foley. A Frenchman who allegedly has links to one of the Paris terrorists